Paris in 1830. The pastor asked Saint Catherine Laboure to ask the Blessed Mother, what is your favorite prayer? And that's what she said. O Mary, conceived without sin, pray for us who have recourse to thee. And has there ever been a time in the world when all of us need recourse to this great, great woman? Today we have a special guest, a very terrific, just an amazing guest. And I know he's going to welcome your calls. So let me tell you a little bit about him. His name is Thomas McKenna. He's the founder and president of Catholic Action for Faith and Family and the St. Gianna Physicians Guild. He's also the executive director of the Confraternity for Catholic Clergy, a national association of over 600 priests and deacons. He's a special guest and has been such on radio and television. You've seen him on EWTN. He's written a wonderful biography of St. Gianna Mala. He's very close to the family, including the little gal that lived because St. Gianna Mala gave her life that she would live. There's also a DVD. You probably have seen it, many of our listeners, I'm sure, on EWTN and other Catholic television networks. This young man is also a member of the Equestrian Order of the Holy Sepulchre of Jerusalem. He's a fourth degree Knight of Columbus, on and on and on and on and on. There's really not too many like him, like this Thomas McKenna, here in the United States and the Catholic Church in America. Tom lives in San Diego with his wife Bridget, who's a gynecological oncologist, and they are just a terrific couple. He is an outstanding Catholic gentleman. And Thomas, we are delighted to have you with us today. Thomas, can you hear me?
Yeah, it's a little bit low.
All right. Can we turn up the volume? So, all right. Thomas, we were just talking just briefly in the introduction about having recourse to the Blessed Mother at this particular time. I mean, just when you look at what is going on here in America and throughout the world, has there ever been a time when we have needed recourse to this woman, this Immaculate Mother of God and the great spouse of the Holy Spirit, the first and eldest daughter of the Father, our Heavenly Father? Have we ever needed recourse to this woman more in our lifetime?
I think it's this is probably in our lifetime the most needed ever, because we've reached a situation where we're just seeing violence, persecution of the faith, just the most unbelievable things that we could ever seen just in our lifetimes. If you go back a few decades when we were growing up, and to see what we are today, where every day, almost every week now, there is just a calamity happening. The shootings here, we see now with police, you know, those who represent justice and protection, and we see that there's no seemingly no safe haven for anyone today.
You know, when you look at it, you think, how did it all begin? Obviously, concupiscence, the fall, man's imperfection, original sin, how it manifests itself, not just in each individual, but also throughout generations and ages and so forth. But it seemed like we took a real sharp turn left or down in the 60s with that sexual revolution. And I just wonder, do you think that could have been the seed that has resulted in all this turmoil and instability throughout the country and world?
Well, Brian, I think what we saw take place in the 60s and into the 70s didn't begin there. This is something that had a decadence in Western civilization that had begun much, much, much before that. We are seeing there a manifest culmination of that. And that's what really it shocked people. It really just came onto the scene where, you know, everything that was always considered, you know, right, authority, principles, you know, religion, you know, just the existence of a God, even if you didn't want to pray or you didn't go to church, but that there was a God. And we see that from then on out, in the last few decades, it has just gone kind of basically a society, and it's not just our country, but the world, saying God does not exist. God does not exist. And that's something that when you say God doesn't exist and you no longer follow the principles, or let's say the guidelines, those moral guidelines that were instituted, you know, the basics, the Ten Commandments, or those things that flowed from it, when you get away from that, and there's no more rules, well, you know, you're going to see things like we're seeing. We're going to, you know, violence is one aspect of it. You know, moral decadence, the rise of drugs. People go looking for other things when there's not following religion. And so really when you look in history, the old, you know, anecdote, history repeats itself. You know, it's pretty simple, but it's very true. And so we see now our society is similar to when we look back in the time of the Romans and other societies that became decadent and put God aside. We can see just, well, Rome's a good example. The empire ceased to exist. And it's interesting that one thing that a great saint of the church, St. Augustine, spoke about was a lot was, you know, sins of nations. And something that he brought up, he said, you know, many times when a nation wants to depart from God or just, you know, be of themselves, not follow religion, morality, and that which he created, many times God's attitude is, so to say, okay, he retracts the grace. You want to live that way? Go that way. And for a time, you'll see things necessarily will degenerate. And I think that is very much what we're seeing today, is a degeneration of the society and all that was, you know, always considered honorable, sacred, and moral.
Where do we go from here? What do you see ahead? We have an awful lot of wonderful, holy people that are working and praying and sacrificing to build the church, to help renew the country. And yet it seems as though this train is just careening, off the tracks.
Well, you know, one of the things that we had talked about before and that I'm involved with is with my organization, Catholic Action for Faith and Family, is a new campaign that we began under the leadership of Cardinal Raymond Burke, an American cardinal residing in Rome, which is Operation Storm Heaven, which is a prayer campaign to unite people to join so that on the each first day of each month, everyone to join in praying a rosary together with Cardinal Burke. He, in Rome, wherever he is, he will pray a rosary, and he celebrates Mass for all those souls, all those members who have signed up and pledged that they would like to join, they would like to pray the rosary together with him, and will benefit from all those prayers, all those rosaries being prayed by the members. They will benefit. And that's something very core to the Blessed Mother, because something that we talk about, and I'm a great believer in the message of Our Lady of Fatima, is that she spoke about a decadence, she spoke about a crisis coming in the world, and that was in 1917. I mean, those were the good old days, those were the holy times compared to today. And what was the main thing that she asked when she appeared? Nothing new. She said, pray the rosary. Several other things, but one of the main ones was pray the rosary. So inspired by that, Cardinal Burke, we had talks about this, so we decided in today's world where we see so many challenges that seemingly we cannot help, you know, we just see horrible legislation, abortion is just growing, we see, you know, the evils of like Planned Parenthood that, you know, videos come out showing this that were done by David Delighted, and you know, we haven't seen action yet, or very little compared to what it could be. What do we do? Well, some things we can't change, and we have to work towards them, but most important is to pray, because we know that through prayer, anything can change. And that's why we started this campaign called Operation Storm Heaven, and it's to pray, and to pray for intentions that we have, and people can join with their own, and to offer reparation. Which we need reparation for the sins of the world today.
I want to go on, drill down a little bit on this, but I also want to invite our listeners to call in if you have a question for Thomas. The call-in number is 610-527-2906, or if you're out of the immediate area, it's 888-343-2484. Thomas, the last attack, if I'm not mistaken, according to Our Lady of Fatima, would be on the family. How has that attack built, and where is it focused today within the family?
Well, I think what we're seeing today, an extent that was unimaginable even, you know, 20 years ago or 10 years ago, was the entire redefinition of the family. No longer, you know, you have things that distracted the family, things that undermined the family, but we're seeing in our country and across the world an actual redefinition of the family. That the family, as God created, as we know, as Catholics, and it wasn't just Catholics, this was just a universal understanding of peoples of all times, that a family was the coming together of a man and a woman and the offspring that they had. That was a family, which we still believe. The Catholic faithful still believe. Nothing has changed. However, we see, as in our country and others, that the government, if you want, in this case it was the Supreme Court of our country, make a ruling saying, no, a family, a marriage is no longer a man and a woman. It can be two men, or it can be two women, or as times go on, we're seeing crazier and crazier things, because once you deviate from the definition and from what the concept of what how God created it, you have others now saying, okay, a marriage, a family is one man with three women, polygamy. Or you have other options for it. Once you've stepped over that line and you want to redefine the basic concept of a marriage that God created and instituted, the sky's the limit. And that's what we're seeing today, is the family. We don't even have now the definition of a person or what a family is. So that is really, you know, how do you bring up your children? How do you talk about the family is the fundamental societal creation that God created. It starts with the family. That's why the parental rights of a family are so important. Is the number one obligation of a parent is to bring their children up in the faith and in society. So if now society is saying, this isn't a family, you know, family can be anything, that's a very, very profound corruption of the decadence that we see today.
You know, what's so hard to stomach about all of that is that it was a 5-4 vote, and a Catholic, Kennedy, cast the fifth vote. And you just wonder, how in God's name did he get to that chair, that seat, and take that point of view on that issue, so fundamental, not only to society, but to his faith? I mean, it was a scandal, wasn't it?
Absolutely, and that's one of the great things, sufferings, I would say, that the faithful today are suffering, is to see a lack of justice, that which is right, that which was, you know, created to be certain institution, let's say basically that which is right is now can be wrong, and that which was wrong can be right based on the vote of men or women. And that's something that, you know, we don't know to what limit that can go. And it's a profound undermining of the faithful values that people have. You know, one of the things that Our Lady asked at Fatima, you know, when she appeared, was she asked for reparation, you know, and reparation means the making of amends for a wrong that has been done. And she said the world at that time, 100 years ago, next year will be the 100th anniversary of the apparitions of Our Lady at Fatima. She said at that time, in one of the revelations to one of the seers, Jacinta, that the sins that were being committed on earth at that time were like the leaves coming off the trees in the fall, that there was just overwhelming, and that's why God had sent the Blessed Mother to bring the message. She came as a messenger. Well, that's 100 years ago. If you look where we are from now compared to 100 years ago, the decadence has just been astronomical, and the suffering that we are incurring now, and we will incur because of this, is something that's very important to pray for reparation. We to pray for that, you know, to make amends. Amends to who? To God. God is being offended. She said, God the Father is being offended. So when we talk about acts of reparation by praying the rosary or holy hours, that's the highest value, because we're talking about reparation to God. We're not talking about, you know, if I rob you and, you know, I get caught or I have a reconciliation, I say, okay, I have to give you that money back. I have to make up. I have to do reparation. Well, we're talking about reparation to God, the Father, the Creator. So that is a very, very important aspect that Our Lady asked. And sadly, many today are not familiar with that. Many don't even think about reparation. So that's very important, is reparation. But again, she said by praying the rosary, that the rosary was a key component that would be something that could alleviate, that could end these crises that we see. So it's something very, very timely for today.
You know, I remember John Paul II declaring that the message of Fatima, quote, is more urgent than ever, end quote. It was a year to the day and hour after he had been shot and almost killed. He took the bullet, placed it in the crown, put the crown on our Blessed Mother's head in the cova, and made that statement. Why do you think in 1982, this is May 13, 1982, he believed that the message of Fatima was more urgent than ever before? Because remember, when it first came, it was just on the cusp of a world war, the First World War, and there was a promise that if man didn't repent and didn't turn back, that there would be a war that would be, quote, far greater, and that nations would be annihilated, whole nations. But yet in 1982, John Paul II, after all of that happened, said that this message is now, I declare, more urgent than ever before. Why?
Well, I can only imagine that, you know, being in the position that he was after already have taken office for several years, that he was in a position to see and understand better than most the crises that the people of the world, countries, and the faithful were up against. And I think because of that, he realized that only something supernatural could alleviate that, could free us from that, could help us. And he had been a great devotee to Our Lady of Fatima and understood, you know, the message that she brought. The message, you know, Our Lady of Fatima, you see the statue sometimes in churches, and there are churches dedicated to it, and people know about the name. They probably know about, you know, Our Lady of Fatima, that was one title or image. But when you ask some people, what did Our Lady say at Fatima? What was the message? Many people, maybe most people, wouldn't really know what that was, that she didn't just come to appear and, you know, be a happy note with the children, but she came to give a message. And I think that's why John Paul II, you know, focused on that. That's why I think it was very linked with, you know, him. One of the aspects is that, you know, he grew up under communism, under a communist regime. Our Lady at Fatima, that's one of the evils of the world that she predicted. She said Russia would spread her errors. And John Paul II lived those errors. He grew up under that regime where the church was persecuted. He had his faith persecuted. So I think anyone who grew up over there in those countries where communism prevailed, like himself, would feel that. They would know firsthand and what that was. And knowing that Our Lady had predicted that decades before, it you didn't have to, you know, think too far to see, is this true or not? Because they were living it. And I think that was something that impacted him very much, and I think why he took the Fatima message very close to heart and wanted to manifest that and to share that and to promote that with the faithful of the day.
Thomas, do you think it's significant that next year, 2017, is the 100th anniversary of the apparitions of Fatima?
Well, I think it's very important. I think the fact that I like to tell people and talk when I lecture is about that we today in the 21st century, you know, 99 years after, we understand what Our Lady spoke at Fatima much better than anyone that lived before us, much better, more than the people that lived in 1917 or 1927 or 1937, because we are seeing in our modern times, the lowest degree of decadence that has existed. And when we see that, we can look back to what Our Lady said. She spoke about moral decline. Well, the moral decline in the world and in our country today is all time, you know, with pornography, with, you know, abortion, with now same-sex marriage. That we see. We see that, you know, she talked about nations being annihilated, wars. She said wars are punishments from God. If people don't change, other wars will come. Look at the situation in the world today. We're seeing nations, some of them I think you can say were annihilated, where people are being, you know, massacred. We saw under communism, you know, tens and tens of millions, if not hundreds, were murdered. And it continues till today. The number of martyrs in these countries we see. So those are things that you go back to Fatima and say, Our Lady spoke about that. No, we entered the 21st century where some thought this is going to be now the era of peace because we have achieved such sophistication. You know, everyone has a phone in their pocket. You know, we can communicate through satellites. We've put a man on the moon. But nonetheless, we've got more wars going on, people being killed, massacred, tortures, and now we're seeing it even in our own countries, as we saw recently in France. We see just in recent days in our country that peace is not here. We do not see peace right now on the horizon. And that's what Our Lady talked about. They called it the peace plan. Fatima is always referred to as the peace plan of God brought by the Blessed Mother. And I think that's something that we need to get back to and why the rosary is so important, and keeping focusing on that and spreading that to others, even today in 2016.
Thomas, how do our listeners join Operation Storm Heaven? What can they do to? I think now my understanding is you've got about 40,000 people, souls throughout the world, and I know your goal is, as I recall, about 1 million souls praying the rosary on the first day of each month, and Cardinal Burke saying a mass in union with all of them. How can our listeners become a part of this very, very important movement?
Well, they can go to our website, which is catholicaction.org, catholicaction.org, and all the information that they can sign up and see what it is to sign up. They can put their intentions there, and they will receive updates once or a couple times a month about when the rosary is upcoming, different events going on around it, messages from Cardinal Burke to the faithful. And what it is, we're asking people, I mean, many people pray the rosary more often, and that's the best. But not everyone does. Some people who have signed up have never prayed the rosary. They're learning the rosary. And we're asking them to come together, and we encourage you to pray it daily. But for the campaign is to join together, because if we can get 1 million people on the first of each month praying in conjunction with His Eminence Cardinal Burke, that's a very, very powerhouse of prayer. We call them prayer warriors. They beseech heaven with prayer and spread the light of truth throughout America and the world. So if you think about 1 million people praying together for all those intentions, one of the benefits, we know we hear something in the church called the Communion of Saints. The Communion of Saints is something, you know, very beneficial for us, that, you know, you can pray for me and I can pray for you, and I can pray, you know, offer for however many people, and now they're benefiting from those prayers. So if we had 10 of us and we got 10 together and said, okay, let's say we all pray for each other today, those prayers going to heaven are now multiplied by 10. So we're thinking to the point, if we need to besiege heaven with prayer, like has happened in the history of the church, we see that having 1 million people, or even now we're at over 45,000 praying on that first of the month, everyone who signs up as a member is benefiting from those prayers of all those people who are say their rosary for the intentions of all those in the campaign. And there are many priests now joining who, aside from praying the rosary, they offer a mass intention on that day for all the members of it. And that's something important called the Communion of Saints, how we can share together the prayers and the confidence of joining together to storm heaven. And God and the Blessed Mother will You know, that's the reparation that they're asking for. So that's what the campaign is really focused on. And it's also giving people, I think, a sense that I'm hearing from people, not just in our country. We're promoting it here, but now the campaign has been found out overseas, and we're actually working on translating the sign-up sheet into a number of languages where people have written from. But I'll give you one example that touched me very early on. The campaign began in December, on December 8th, the Feast of the Immaculate Conception, 2015, just a few months ago. And I believe it was probably January, shortly after, we received a letter from a woman in Germany. Out of the blue, a letter comes in from Germany. So a very nice letter typed out. And the letter said, "Dear Mr. McKenna, I am a housewife in Germany raising three children, and I want to thank you and Cardinal Burke for initiating this campaign. It has given me such hope, and knowing that others are praying together gives me a tremendous consolation." And it's interesting. She said, I'm sending you 50 euros. She sent a 50-euro bill. She said, "I know it's probably not the best thing to do, but I wanted to contribute to the campaign. And please don't send me a receipt or any recognition. I don't need that." And then she said, "Because I know that we will be together on the first of each month." And then the letter mentioned many people, you know, "I feel alone. I feel some people think I'm kind of a religious fanatic because I am a practicing Catholic." And she said, it gave me such consolation knowing that there's others like you that will be together praying the rosary for each of our intentions on the first of the month." And I found that was very touching to see how this little campaign we started here is reaching people. And that's just one of, I would say, hundreds, if not thousands, of stories, letters, and emails that we're receiving from around the world regarding the campaign.
Thomas, that's wonderful. Will you stay with us, please, through our break? We're about to take a break. And before we do, I just want to remind our listeners that this show is brought to you by the Knights of the Immaculate, the great group and movement that St. Maximilian Kolbe started 100 years ago within the shadow of Fatima, actually. It was in Rome in 1917. And it was founded to be an antidote to Freemasonry, which he called the locus of evil in modern times. And it requires or invites all of us to consecrate our lives to the Immaculate, to actually Jesus and His Sacred Heart through our Immaculate Mother. And the purpose of that is, again, not unlike Operation Storm Heaven, for all of us in solidarity to offer reparation to the Immaculate so that this great triumph that's been promised of her Immaculate Heart can come about, and that we can have healing and peace and a restoration of justice in our time. With that, I want to break away for a commercial for In His Sign Network that is the sponsor of this show. Thank you.
This is Lucille Francesco. I just wanted to say a few words about In His Sign Network, which to me is personified in the person of Kathleen McCarthy. That loving voice that comes through the radio, you can just hear her personal interest in each of us. She's like a guardian angel. She personifies the light of Christ and the friendship that is waiting for us with Jesus. She has the ability to reach out to each of us with a phrase or a word that says, "I understand," and he does too. When Kathleen is speaking, you're certain that she's speaking directly to you, no matter what the topic may be on the program that day. And if you have the opportunity to meet Kathleen in person, which is a gift everyone should experience, she looks directly into your eyes and blesses your soul, no matter what the past may have been or the troubles you may have had. It is a wonderful experience to listen to In His Sign Radio Network.
You're listening to In His Sign Catholic Radio, empowered by the Holy Spirit, bringing the fire of God's love to the world. We often think of the scripture where the disciples were walking to Emmaus, where they said, "Were not our hearts burning within us as Jesus spoke to us on the road?" As we travel along the road together in our Archdiocese of Philadelphia and Camden Diocese, we thank God for our loyal circle of family and friends. Please consider sponsoring one of our new programs in the name of your parish priest, family member, or friend. It would be a beautiful way of helping us to proclaim the gospel of Jesus Christ, our risen Lord. Give us a call at 610-527-2906 or visit us on the web at inhissign.com.
Hi, this is Brian Gale. We're back with our guest, Thomas McKenna, and this is Our Recourse, brought to you by the Knights of the Immaculate. Thomas, there are so many things we could talk about, including that great work you do with physicians, the Physicians Guild, the St. John of Mala Physicians Guild, but I think in the time left, I'd like to focus, if you don't mind, on this Confraternity of Catholic Clergy. You are the executive director. There is an association, from what I understand, of about 600 priests and deacons. And you have been on television and radio. My wife has heard you, and I have seen you talking about how important this confraternity is. Maybe you could just tell our listeners, what's the purpose of a confraternity for Catholic clergy?
Well, Brian, the confraternity was founded by a group of a few priests back in 1975, and it was founded out of a necessity. Is those of your listeners who are your age or my age would recall somewhat of a lot of turmoil in the church. Those were the 60s going into the 70s. There was a lot of confusion, a lot of discussion after the Vatican Council about what. It's a new path for the church. Many were saying it's a new liberating aspect of the church, but there was a lot of confusion. Nobody can disagree with that. And as a result of it, the priest who founded it saw that there were, at that time, sadly, I think a lot of it because of this confusion or misconceptions or whatever, there's a lot of opinions on that. We saw the decline and the many religious sisters, clergy leaving the priesthood, leaving the convent, and like that they saw perhaps a new vocation in life, or that this was a different aspect. But the results was these priests. They said, we saw priests that we were ordained with, priests who were around us, started becoming very decadent. Some left the priesthood. Some that wanted to stay with the values that they had been ordained with. People were saying, well, that's out. That's no longer the church is on a new direction. And they felt very, alienated. So these priests formed this organization, and what it was to give confraternity. It was to bring an understanding to promote its faith fidelity to the papacy. It is to fidelity to the magisterium of the church, to promote, good, wholesome, holy priests. And so they began a journal, and they began a annual convocation, which 4 or 5 days, where they would come together to hear speakers on the liturgy, on commandments, on just things, everything that a priest, top-notch speakers, that kind of as a further education for priests. A lot of times it was on new things that were happening in the world, whether it be ethical, bioethical, liturgical. They would have people, experts, come in and give them formation. But above all, I think, which really is reflected in the name, confraternity, and from what I've observed in the 23 years that I've been helping them, is that just being together with fellow priests who had the same enthusiasm and the same love of the church was a tremendous consolation, and it helped them to be better priests, to grow in their priesthood, and to strive to grow in holiness. And that's really what it's been. I got involved. It's an organization for priests and deacons, and it's national, and it's also gone international now. There's a organization in Australia, in England, in Ireland, and now recently in Scotland. And we come together every 5 years in Rome for a United Conference. But I was asked a couple years ago to work as a volunteer position as the executive director, kind of what I had been doing, helping them for many, many years. It's been 23, 24 years now, to put on their conferences, to help with logistics, to give ideas, and really built great friendships. It's something that I really believe in, is the support and formation of holy and good priests. So that was my involvement. I'm the only layman really involved in it, other than the priests and deacons, and I find it an honor to serve with these priests and try to grow and expand that for the benefit of our clergy in our country.
Well, I remember John Paul II famously, St. John Paul II now, famously saying, without the priests, there's no Eucharist, and without Holy Eucharist, there is no church. And he went on to say that it's in the Eucharist where we encounter our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, who reveals himself to us and reveals us to ourselves. And he talked about how important it was for the church to have priests that can offer that encounter, that personal encounter. And if the Eucharist is the source and summit of our church, then the priest must indeed have a very special vocation.
Well, they do. And I think in today's world, with a lot of the problems and confusion we have, and the noise we have today, that we've got so much, to keep up with, that it's not, there's a lot of things that, if you want, fall through the cracks. And I think something that's been kind of lost, it's kind of faded, is the respect, and a respect because of an understanding of what the office of the sacred priesthood is. We call it its sacred priesthood. And I think today, some people kind of see this, as a job description, that, I'm a lawyer, I'm a doctor, or whatever, and Father is a priest, and people sometimes treat them like that, that their job is Saturday and Sunday to have the sacraments, say Mass, and that's their job, when in reality, you need to reflect deeper, is their job, their vocation, first of all, it's not a job, it's a vocation, and the word vocation comes from the Latin word vocare, which means to call. We all have a calling, and whether we answer the call of God or answer it in the best way, that's up to us, and that's what we need to pray for discernment. But a priest answering the call is a very, very high calling, because they give up their own life. They give up, doing things that just what they want to do. They're at the mercy, kind of like a doctor. It's who's at the mercy of their patients. If it's 2 a.m. and the person has a problem, that they're there for him. A doctor is called out on a house call for an emergency call at 2 a.m. A good doctor doesn't even think about, it's 2 a.m, wait till tomorrow. And I think the same thing is a priest. A priest is, called out, someone needs the sacrament, someone's dying, someone needs something, the priests are there for them. And that's something that I don't think enough value is given in today. And I think that's something that is very important for people to. I know there's been challenges in today's world. There's a lot of attacks on the church. There were, sadly, abuse cases in the church, which is true. But again, it was a small minority, and it was bad, and the church has paid the price. But we can't let that kind of shade our view of the priesthood, that most of the priests are very dedicated, good, upstanding citizens and faithful pastors of the flock. And that's something that I've always really focused on, and I've always felt, and is why whenever I have the opportunity, I'm called upon to help a priest or deacon, or in this case, the Confraternity of Catholic Clergy as a body that reaches out, I've always felt inspired to help them, because I saw the good that this can do for a priest.
I've always had a deep admiration and high respect for those priests who have stood faithful in season and out over time, decades after decades. But the ones that really make me just nearly overwhelmed at their valor and their virtue are the younger ones, particularly the ones who are late vocations, who have been out in the world working and now are coming into our seminaries because they want to consecrate their lives and they want to give the whole of their lives in service to the people of God. Isn't it an extraordinary thing to see?
It is, and that's something that I see as a sign of hope, and I see it as the work of the Holy Spirit. Because in an age when we saw kind of a problem of in clergy, we saw that, you know, the church, all this kind of confusion, where a lot of, let's say, the traits, the a lot of the old things that, you know, used to be done were kind of put aside, and now we see a resurgence of that, of young priests in the priesthood, of new vocations that, you know, want to wear the cassock. They want to be the priest. They want to be the image of the you know, priest. They're not. They're proud to wear their clerics in public. You know, there was an era that, you know, kind of like the clerics were out and the priests should, you know, don't need to dress like priests. And, it's, you know, there are that element today. But I think that's something that is very important for the priest, is the identity. And so, like at the confraternity and others that you work with, and there's many, many good priests like that in dioceses and religious orders that understand the importance of wearing the habit or wearing the clerics or, you know, dressing as a priest, and they're not ashamed of it. You know, that's something that I think was challenging for a lot of priests was when this whole, you know, priest, you know, scandal came out, and which, by the way, was just amplified, in my opinion, and it's been proven by the media. Yes, it did happen, but it was taken to a whole nother level. You know, many priests would sometimes say, you know, I'm not going to wear my clerics. I don't want people to identify as me as a priest because we have such a bad rap now. And, you know, when I had the occasion or someone mentioned, I said, Father, that's, you know, you don't need to do that. There are so many more that look at you and see that a priest is a person of God, and we respect you for that. And I try to reassure them that we appreciate that. You know, a lot of times the priests stopped and they said, really? And I said, absolutely. And I think, you know, a lot of people might not realize that, you know, priests do have a lot of challenges today. And, sometimes a word of support from the laity, you know, even just when a priest gives a good sermon, to go out of your way to go and let Father by an email or stop by when you greet him after Mass, say, Father, that homily today was really good. It touched me. You engaged me, Father. That's the kind of, you know, support that can go a long way and which many times is overlooked today.
You know, these good men are just overwhelmed with their work. And when you talk to them, it's not a matter of having a 50 or 60-hour a week job. The good ones have like a 70, 80-hour a week job. And I don't think, in fact, you know, I know for a fact it's not sustainable. And they always or very often feel very guilty about time taken away for something like this or any other refresher type of a devotional activity or retreat or anything like that. They know they need one, but they are just overwhelmed because there's just not that many of them, and the needs are growing, and they are growing in urgency.
That's true, and that's why I say that, you know, to follow that vocation, priests make a lot of sacrifice, whether it's perceived or not perceived, and most of the time I would say it wouldn't be perceived, that, you know, a priest goes out of his way to help people. That's, after all, what the vocation is about. You know, I've heard people say, oh, it's, you know, Father does, he has a good job, he's got a good situation, he says Mass, one Mass a day, and he says Mass on Sundays, and, you know, and he's got it covered. And I think that's a very minimalistic and a very wrong way to look at the vocation of a priest. And the fact that they're there, they can administer the sacraments to us, which nobody else can. If you're dying and you need the last sacraments, confession, it's only a priest that can administer that to you. It's only a priest that can, you know, attend to your, you know, Holy Viaticum. And that's something that I think is important and good to, you know, recall when you see a priest or when you go to church, is to say a prayer for the priest. You know, I like to ask people sometimes, how often do you pray for your priests? Sure, we you know, it's easy, and you hear that occasionally, you know, criticism. Father did this, or Father said that, or, you know, he went a little too far in you know, speaking out against something, which probably he was right about it, and people didn't want to hear it, but that's his role. You know, there's the Curia of Ars, who was a saint, Saint Curia of Ars, Saint John Vianney. He is the patron saint of priests. You know, he was a very simple priest, you know, and he had a saying that if a priest is a saint, his people will be holy. If the priest is holy, the people will be lukewarm. If the priest is lukewarm, the people will be poor Catholics, something to that. And that's because the priest sets the tone. The priest is preaching, his ministry, how he conveys the church, the teachings of Christ to the people, is what his life is about, and it's so important. That's why we need to have holy priests, every priest, as we should have holy parents, parents of a family, I would say, would be, you could apply the same thing. And I think that's something that, why it's important to pray for our clergy. And that's why, you know, in the campaign of the Rosary, we're always talking about in Operation Storm Heaven, we have, you know, priests that are joining us, and we should pray for the priests and pray for new vocations, you know. A vocation is something very special, and people need graces to correspond to that. And I think that's something that, you know, is something in our world today can be overlooked. I think there's a lot of these what seemingly simple concepts that are overlooked today.
You know, I always thought, too, one of the core benefits, one of the core blessings that the priesthood conferred on we who are lay people is their sense of accompaniment, that they accompany us through life in the building of our families and the building of our businesses and our communities. And when problems come up, they are there. And when there are moral dilemmas, they are there. I speak from personal experience. Had a wonderful priest by the name of Father John McFadden, very popular here in the Philadelphia region. He was a Marian priest. He was a pro-life priest. He was a charismatic priest. And he accompanied many, many, many of us through all the various problems and difficulties that we had. And I just remember marveling when I saw how many people depended on him, turned to him for counsel, knowing that they would get truth, they would get wisdom. Even if he didn't have an answer, a solution to the problem, he always had good direction. And he always left you feeling a sense of hope, and really that a deepened prayer would build a trust that would unlock a solution. That, I think, is such an important and overlooked part of the priesthood. Don't you agree?
Yeah, I would agree with you, Brian. I think a lot of people misunderstand some of the sacraments, maybe from just lack of experience or lack of teaching or upbringing, or, you know, just something that in today's world, you know, wasn't taught to them, was, for example, you know, the sacrament of confession, how special that is, and how that's a very key sacrament that only a priest can do in the name of Christ, is to absolve sins. And I think that's something that, you know, people need to realize, that the priest is there hearing confessions, spending hours there sometimes, or sometimes spending an hour with no one coming, but he stays there because he's there for the people. And his love of the people, the priests, they love their congregants. That's why they're there suffering and sacrificing, is to help them to get to heaven. Whether, and if it means, you know, hearing confession and hearing it twice a week or going extra, whatever it takes, that's what a priest can do. And it's a transformer of souls. Something that's very interesting is, I have a friend who, she's not Catholic, but she's a well-known psychologist. And one time I was asking her about what she does, who sees her people. It was interesting. She said, a lot of the cases and people that I'm dealing with, it's similar to what you Catholics do when you go to confession, is people, you know, have done things, have had guilt, or have, you know, different reasons that they come to me to talk to how to get over that, and we talk through it, and, you know, because it's eating at them. Like they maybe had a fight with a family member and it's been years now, or they did something that they regret. Well, how do they get over it? And she said, in many of the cases, that, you know, the normal things and not is in your church, you have confession. You go and the person talks, tells the priest, and through your faith, you know that, you know, through the sacrament, you're forgiven by God. So a lot of what you're, the priests of the Catholic Church deal with is what I deal with in my private practice. And that was kind of an insight, and I kind of laughed. I said, well, that's kind of interesting, and it costs a lot less.
Well, that's exactly what Archbishop Fulton J. Sheen said. He used to make a joke of it. He'd say, look, you can either go to a professional psychiatrist and pay, I guess, $100 an hour, whatever the rate was then, or you can go to a Catholic priest and walk out not only understanding what the problem is, but really forgiven from the root cause of it. You know, I have to ask you, it seems to me that a major challenge in our time for our beloved priests this is the Jubilee Year of Mercy. They want to preach mercy. In fact, they try to preach mercy. But I think it's difficult for them to preach mercy to a generation and an age that doesn't believe it needs it. And secondly, on top of that, there is confusion in the church now about what the church really does teach on certain fundamental issues. Does the confraternity address either of those?
Yes. Well, again, the confraternity initially, you know, its main function is for the priests. It is to, you know, provide them with ongoing education or in, you know, newsletters, statements, sharing material with them, and then coming together for these for the meetings that they have. But I think, you know, the laity, you know, are welcome to visit their website. There's beautiful articles, there's information, there's videos of past meetings that have been given at the meetings, and that can be seen at catholicclergy.net, catholicclergy.net. And I think your listeners can go there and get a, you know, see what the confraternity does, what it stands for, and what they have. Like one of the things they ask their members to sign is, you know, is agree with is a profession of faith and oath of fidelity. Well, that's something that they have there for the priests, but I think it would behoove many faithful to read through that and say, do I believe, you know, this is a priest, but it talks about believe and profess everything that is contained in the symbol of faith, namely, and then it starts, well, that's for the priests, but we as laity have to accept the teachings and accept what the church is to. So I think some of these things we have to, you know, understand that, you know, they're real people. They're people like us. They have a special calling. And that's something that I would, you know, encourage your listeners to look at that aspect. Go to this website at catholicclergy.net. And stop and think about that a little bit. Their pastor, their local priest, have they said in the last year, have they said once or twice a compliment to them? Or do they just walk out of Mass early and really they've never greeted their priests? You know, those are little things that priests do appreciate. They care for people. And I think if people understood the care that they had for each one, I think there would be a closer understanding of the family of souls that is in a parish with their priest.
Thomas, you know, when I step back and I look at your life and the things you're involved in, you're at an intersection of major significance, it appears to me. Here you are working with John Amala's family, with physicians. You are also working with our Catholic priests, the Catholic clergy, and the confraternity. You are also involved in Operation Storm Heaven, getting people around the world, particularly here in America, to say the rosary, to build family and to renew the face of the earth through the church. I have to ask you, how did you come by your faith, your journey, and how did it lead you to this intersection?
Well, I guess I really don't know. It's, you know, early on, I have to say, early on, growing up, I was raised, my family were farmers in California, and I had a nice, you know, as a boy, growing up on a ranch with horses and hunting, and I raised dogs, I trained horses, I, you know, I would say I had it all. I spent all my time out there, and I was always a Catholic. I would say that my parents instilled that in me. I always went to church, but, you know, I always protested. We had to pray the rosary every night, and, you know, I didn't want to wear the scapular, and I didn't. But, you know, something my mother used to say to me, and that I think really was the seed that, you know, what got to me was, she said, this is all fine. You can do these things, and you're good at it. But she said, you know, when you go before God and he asks you, what did you do for me? You have to think about what you're going to answer him. And then just here I was a teenager, you know, and even though I brushed it off and acted like it didn't really mean anything, you know, it did. And then about that time, my parents were always great promoters and believers in the message of Fatima, and I believed in it. I started thinking about it, and I thought, well, if I believe it, and I do believe it, I can't contradict it. The church has approved it as private revelation. If I believe that, who am I not to do something? And it took a while. It took, you know, a number of years thinking about it. And finally, I couldn't give a good answer. And I decided, well, I'll have to give up some of the things that I like to do to help others and, you know, help the church. So that was what got me, you know, moving was that commitment. That was the barrier to get over. And do I want to? And in my capacity, I think I've pursued, you know, directing organizations and then now working with Cardinal Burke and founding the organizations I direct now. But I think that's a challenge everyone has to see is, what am I called to in the new evangelization, no matter what my profession is? If I'm a housewife, okay, I take care of my children. That's my primary concern. And is there anything more that I could do? Is there another family at church that I can reach out to and become their friend and help them? Or if I'm a businessman, do I have, you know, can I recruit some? Do I go to a retreat? So we all have to look at it. In my case, it was a little more active, and I was involved, and I'm actively involved in doing these organizations. But I would say we all have to look at it, and it's not easy. It's something you have to discern, and sometimes it takes years. But, if we're giving it for the kingdom, we all have to look, how can we give something, or should I, or can I? Maybe I think I'm giving it all. I can't. But that's something we should step back and see. Is there some way that I can help the church or a fellow Catholic in a better way?
Well, Tom, you are really an inspiration. It's extraordinary, the good that you do and all that you're involved in to help build the kingdom. I want to remind our listeners that they can go to Operation Storm Heaven. What is the website again?
CatholicAction.org. That's CatholicAction.org.
Very good. And I want to remind our listeners also to keep In His Sign Network in their prayers, and anytime they can spare a few dollars to keep this wonderful network going, it would be greatly appreciated. We know many, many people who are shut in and sick and in their cars driving to and from work and things like that, that really want to be edified by people like Tom McKenna. And Tom, we're very, very grateful for you joining us today. Would you promise to come back sometime?
Absolutely, Brian, but I want to commend you also for the good work that you do helping the church and with this radio program and for the radio. You know, people, it does take effort. It's not easy, and, you know, many people benefit from it. And if it just benefits one soul driving in a car that could be a conversion or bringing them back to the faith, it's all worth it. So I want to thank you and the network there for the good work that you all do.
Thanks, Tom. God love and bless you. Be safe.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you for tuning in to Our Recourse. We are grateful to our sponsors and to Kathleen McCarthy and In His Sign Catholic Radio for bringing this show into your homes and cars. Please remember In His Sign Catholic Radio in your prayers and charitable contributions so we can continue to offer authentic Catholic programming 2 hours every day, 5 days a week. We can be reached at 610-527-2906 or on the web at inhissign.com. www.inhissign.com. Join us next week at this same time for another edition of Our Recourse with Brian Gale.